Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by Ring. For $50 off the Ring of Security Kit, go to ring.com/campfire. Protect your family and your home. Go to ring.com/campfire today. That's ring.com/campfire. Thanks, Ring.
Welcome to our gathering tonight. Here we share stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things. Sit back, relax, and warm yourself by Jim Harold's Campfire.
Welcome to the campfire. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. And if you're new around these parts, around the campfire, let me tell you what's in store. What's in store are strange but true stories of the supernatural, of the strange. Could be ghosts, could be UFOs, could be Bigfoot, could be past lives. It might be any array of subjects. So let's not wait around any longer. Let's delve right in. Here is the campfire. A longtime listener, Mike, is on the line. He's been listening for about 5 years now. He's in Arizona, and he's going to tell us about one of the spookiest kinds of stories we hear on the show, workplace hauntings. Mike, welcome to the show, and tell us what happened.
Okay, Jim. This happened back in California when I was working there. Little background. I was a healthcare worker at the time. And I was working in assisted living. And I happened to work on the graveyard shift. Now, we have, you know, not the typical Monday through Friday shift. So... And we would go in and do reports, and with our residents there, we would have to do bed checks every 2 hours. And my shift was 10 p.m. to 6 a.m., so our first bed check would be around 10:15 to 10:30, and then, you know, 12:15, 12:30, and so on. And there was always two of us, so we would always have... one person on one side of the building doing bed checks, and the other person would be on the other side doing bed checks. Well, it just so happens that I was doing bed checks one night, and it just happened to be on my work schedule, my Monday night. And I'm going down the hallway, and I see, I'll use Mrs. Jones.
Okay.
She was walking down the hallway with her walker in her nightgown, which was not uncommon for some of the residents to do. They would, you know, get up in the middle of the night and want to walk around and go to the common area. Sometimes they just wanted a drink of water.
Sure.
And so I greeted her with a smile. I said, you know, good evening, Mrs. Jones. How are you doing tonight? She just looked at me and smiled. And I said, okay, if you want to go up to the common area and hang out for a few minutes, that would be great. I'll come back and I'll walk you back to your room and put you in bed. And she just smiled and waved at me. And I continued my rounds. And by the time I got back to the common room, she wasn't there. So I went and looked in the hallway, and she wasn't there. I figured, okay, she went back to bed. No real need to check on her or do anything. And I told my coworker about that. She's like, yeah, don't worry about it. She's Mrs. Jones. She's always happy and healthy. I said, okay. So I did my rounds again 2 hours later, saw Mrs. Jones in the hallway again. Didn't really think much of it. Okay, maybe she's a night owl tonight. Not an uncommon thing. And this happened every time I did my rounds. Come 6 o'clock, you know, the morning crew comes in and we're given report. And I said, you know, Miss Jones was up quite a bit last night. And I said, oh, that's not possible.
Huh.
What do you mean that's not possible? I saw her every time I did my rounds, but I, you know, since I just saw her, I didn't do a bed check. And they said, well, you've been off for the past 2 days. Okay, yeah. And they said, well, no, Miss Jones died right after you left.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, but that's not possible because I've seen her all night long.
Wow.
And they said, come with me. So we went and her room was empty. And I said, I need to see the reports on this. So they showed me the reports of her passing. And when the paramedics came and did their job, I said, okay. As time goes on, I have come to find out that in assisted living, this is a normal thing. If, because you get attached to the residents, you start to know them, you become their family. So if you are not there at their time of passing, they will come back to you to say their goodbyes.
Wow. Wow. That's, you know, you've been listening since 2011. I've been doing this show since 2009. That's one of my favorite all-time campfire stories.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I did. In fact, that's going to be the name of the show, Me and Mrs. Jones. And what a story. And it really tells you, I mean, really, it's pretty much a zero-sum thing. And I believe you, Mike, and I believe this happened. But to me, if the skeptic comes up, there are two explanations for this. One, it happened, or two, you're making it up, and I don't believe for a minute that you're making it up. So this is one of those cases. There is no other logical explanation. It's an amazing story.
No. You know, and the funny thing is, I'm a skeptical believer. Not everything like that goes bump in the night is paranormal. There has to be a logical explanation.
Yep. I'm right with you.
And sometimes there's just no logic whatsoever. It's just they're coming back to say their goodbyes to you and because they consider you their family.
Well, Mike, I just got to say, that was a jaw dropper. I love that story. Thank you for listening for all these years and for sharing that great story on the campfire.
Well, thank you for having the campfire.
Alex from Central New York is on the line. He's been listening for years, found us from when we were doing the video version of the Paranormal Report with Micah Hanks. And he's been hooked ever since, and we're so glad. And I'm not even going to tell you or preface this except to say these kind of stories are some of my absolute favorites. I think you're going to love it. Alex, tell us what happened and welcome to the show.
All right. Thank you, Jim. So a couple years ago, my stepdaughter, who's she's about 9 now, and this occurred when she was like 4 years old. She'd always would talk about like past life or her, she had to bury her kids or she had to bury her mother. She had kids that kicked her out of the house. And all this crazy stuff. And she would always talk about this friend named Emily she had as well. And basically, this went on for a couple months, I would say. I mean, quite a while we lived in the apartment. And, you know, she would always be talking about how she had her friend Emily. She was blonde haired or a white dress. And, you know, basically all this kind of interesting stuff. But we always kind of chalked it up to imaginary friend.
And she was how old again, was she?
Like 3 or 4, wow. I'd say. Yeah. So, and it would get to the point where like she was talking about it so much that one night we were driving home and this could have been a coincidence. I mean, it was just kind of funny. She's talking about it in the backseat of the car, how her friend Emily's with her and everything. And just kind of jokingly, I say, or I'm like, all right, G, I'm like, her name is Juliana, but we called her G. I say, all right, G, is Emily a ghost? And she's like, no, she's my friend. And just as she says that, cow, it was in the middle of the road and I had to like jerk the steering wheel and like swerve out of the way. So basically that went on for a while and we always noticed in the apartment strange things would happen. Like one night I was sitting there watching TV and there was a hallway down to our kitchen in the apartment and I noticed that, or I saw my wife and my girlfriend at the time walk into the bedroom, turned the light on, turned the TV on, and I assumed she was like folding laundry, putting laundry away. So I noticed she was in there for a while and I kind of said, I'm like, do you need any help in there? And she's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, well, I'm assuming you're doing laundry. And she's like, I'm not in the bedroom. I'm in the kitchen doing homework. And she was going for school at the time. So sure enough, we got up, we went in there, the light was on, the TV was on the bedroom, but she had not stepped foot in there.
Huh.
So yeah. So TV would turn on periodically. One night I woke up and, I felt a cold poke on the tip of my nose, and woke up right away, and there was nothing there. We would hear footsteps and stuff like that. But one night, I was sitting out watching TV, and both G and my wife were in bed, and I heard Juliana like gasping and crying, you know. So I went into her room, and she was like, couldn't catch her breath, and she was making this really funny noise, and it was kind of scary.
Sure.
And we ended up finding out that it was croup cough, which at the time, I didn't know what that was, but apparently it's kind of common for kids that age. So I ended up barging into my bedroom, and I'm like, Nikki, you got to get up. I don't know what's going on. Well, gee, something's wrong. So we get her up, we take her outside. They say like the cold air kind of helps him to cough and everything. After all that happened and we put her back to bed, she's like, Alex, right before you came in, I saw a little girl open the door. She's like, I don't know if I was dreaming or what, but a little blonde haired girl with a white dress opened a door with a look of surprise on her face. And 2 seconds later, you busted in and said, hey, listen, you know, something's wrong with G. So that was kind of crazy.
Wow. Yeah. That is strange.
Yeah, it was very strange. So, but while all of this was going on, there was one night where we ended up taking a trip to Pennsylvania, and we were spending a night at a hotel. We were going to a amusement park called Dorney Park or something. So mind you, G was around like three and a half, four years old. And we just put her down to bed and we're like, okay, G, good night. And she said, oh, she goes, okay, I'm going to go die now. And we're like,
wow,
like, G, yeah, like you can't say that. That's not a nice thing to say. And she's like, oh, I know. I was just kidding, but it would be like last time anyways. And I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, well, kind of like last time where Gerald came down, took the stone off my head, and then I went up to heaven with him. And I hung out there for a little while. And then I picked out you and daddy or you, mommy, daddy, and everybody to come back down to live with. And we're like, who's like, you know, what's going on here? You know what I mean? And I think maybe she went to church like once or twice. It's not like we regularly went to church or really spoke about the afterlife or anything like that in particular. But so we start asking her and we're like, well, who's Gerald? And she's like, oh, he was the guy that took the stone off my head and he carried him up to heaven. He had wings and everything like that. And she was saying it like very matter of fact.
Wow.
Like, yeah, he's got wings, you know. So we're like kind of really weirded out at that point. And we ended up, you know, putting her to sleep. And we didn't sleep much that night. We're kind of freaked out, you know, but it was kind of neat. But the next morning we were driving home from Pennsylvania and we passed a cemetery. And she points out the window. She goes, that's one of the stones. One of those stones he got off my head. And then she pointed to one of the gravestones. Oh, we're like, oh my God.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So it was pretty crazy.
So it sounds like she was actually had a past life and she was recalling the death process and then kind of the regeneration process that many people believe that we have where there's this like waiting period and then you come back down and give it another shot. I mean, that's kind of what she was telling you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everything from her talking about how she, you know, her kids didn't want her and kicked her out of the house. And then she had to bury her mother all the way up. It's almost like she remembered the last few moments of her life, her past life, and then the transition into the new one. It was really interesting.
Now, as time went on, I'm guessing she forgot about all this. Is that correct?
Yeah, as usual. You know, she's kind of like talked less and less about it. And I think it turned more in from that matter of fact statements to more of an imagination and things like that. But I mean, for those few years, it was, it was really interesting. So
I love that story. And I love those kinds of stories because would she have gotten that information? I mean, to me, these are some of the most fascinating stories that we hear on the campfire. And I love when we hear them and I'd like to thank you for sharing them. And since you shared such a great story, I know you're a podcaster, I believe. So why don't you tell people about your podcast and where people can find it?
Oh, awesome. Thank you, Jim. So a friend of mine and I have started up a podcast called Is Anyone There? And basically it's a mix between, I'd say, you know, like The Walking Dead and South Park. It's a improv comedy kind of zombie show. So basically my friend and I are held up in a house, the zombie apocalypse, and we provide a weekly broadcast and we have different survivors come on the show.
That's
and everything.
That's a great idea.
So thank you. So we're on all the major, you know, podcasting mediums, TuneIn, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, basically any of them, SoundCloud as well. So if you just search for Is Anyone There, you can find it. So
excellent. Very good. Well, I wish you the best with the podcast and thank you so much for spending some time on the campfire.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jim.
Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by Ring. Now, ghost stories might be scary, but I'm going to tell you about something even scarier, and it might visit you. I hope it doesn't, but it could. How about this statistic? There's a home burglary every 13 seconds. And something that my friends over at Ring have told me that I didn't know, that most happen in broad daylight. And the intruder, what they do is they will actually go and ring your doorbell first to make sure you're away before they do their evil business of breaking in. But that is until the Ring video doorbell, my friends. You need to check it out because luckily there is the Ring video doorbell. I love it. I have one. And it has been proven to stop burglaries before they begin by allowing you to see and to speak to anyone approaching your door using your smartphone, whether you're at home, you're upstairs, you're in the basement, wherever you might be in your house. For some reason, you can't come to the door. Maybe you don't want to come to the door, but you can answer. But that's only half of it. That's very neat. True. How many times have we not wanted to go to the door? Not sure who it is. Maybe we're busy. But what if you're halfway around the world? Well, luckily you have Ring because you can answer your door just like you're at home. You can be thousands of miles away just using your smartphone. Those burglars who are trying to see if anybody's home, you've got them fooled because you are there in a sense via your Ring. Now, video doorbell is great, but now Ring is upping their game by using their advanced motion detection technology to protect your entire property with the Ring of Security Kit. Now, the kit includes a Ring video doorbell for the front door and what they call a Ring stick-up cam, the wireless weatherproof HD camera to keep an eye on other parts of your property. You could have the Ring video doorbell in the front. You could have the stick-up cam in the back. You can move them around as you wish. And they both install in minutes, and working together, they provide 24/7 monitoring of your entire home, whether you're in the living room and or again, thousands of miles away. Now, fans of the show know that I value my family above all, as I'm sure you do yours. And now I feel so much safer with the Ring of Security Kit. So I've got a deal for you. For a limited time, my listeners get $50 off the Ring of Security Kit. And think of all the different things you can buy out there. But what really is more important than the safety of your family, of your property, of your home? What's more important? Is there anything that you can buy that's more important than this? I don't think so. In terms of priorities, you know, you might get a new computer or a new phone or all these great gadgets, and that's all great. But all of it could be gone if somebody comes in and steals it all. So why not start with the basis? Get that Ring of Security Kit and protect all that stuff. Plus, protect the physical safety of your home. It's a great thing. Now, this is the lowest price anywhere. So go to ring.com/campfire. That's ring.com/campfire. It is for a limited time. So we want the folks at Ring to know that you support the show. So please, please go over there. Join the hundreds of thousands who protect their home with Ring. For $50 off the Ring of Security Kit, go to ring.com/campfire. That's ring.com/campfire. Protect your family and your home. Go to ring.com/campfire today. Thanks, Ring. Next up on the campfire is a new listener. He's been listening for a week, but he says he's totally hooked, and that's the way it's supposed to work. He found us on Spotify. Dylan from Ontario, Canada is calling in tonight, and he's got several experiences he's going to share, so I'm going to let him do that. Dylan, welcome to the program, and tell us what happened.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jim. I'm going to start off with a story I had a few years back. I moved into my girlfriend's dad's house. I'm 24 now, so I would have been 20 at the time. And we started talking about paranormal stuff, and that's kind of how we hit it off, I guess, in a relationship. And one night, I'd say about almost like even a week into dating her, I was sitting on a couch, and we were talking about stuff that she had go on there. She's seen shadow figures and stuff like that move around, but like in her eyes and stuff like that, and her dad said that stuff too. So right. I'm sitting on the couch. And I start provoking it. I'm like, if there's anything here, make a noise, make a sound, show us it here, like not expecting anything to happen out of it. Hmm. And as soon as I said that, the fluorescent light bulb in the kitchen, it flickered about 3 times.
Oh my.
And then the basement door slammed shut, completely shut. Oh, it freaked me right out. Hopped in my car, got out of there, And then my girlfriend left her purse in the house, so I had to run back in and get it. So when I entered back into the house, I heard like paper falling.
Yes.
So I went around in the room, and there's like a little section. There's a bedroom, and then another bedroom, and then a washroom.
Mm-hmm.
And the poster that was on the back of the wall in her sister's room was in the hallway on the ground.
Oh my!
So that freaked me right out.
Sure.
So moving on from that, probably about a year later, I was living there for a bit. I lived there for about a year, but a year later, I was in the bedroom watching Netflix with her,
right.
And she went to go make popcorn. So I'm laying in bed, just waiting for her to come in, picking a movie. And I hear her say something in the kitchen. So right. I'm like, what? And nothing. And I'm like, what? And all I hear is, it's Carolyn. Like, just faintly. So it kind of freaks me out. She comes in the room, and I'm like, why did you say it's Carolyn? And the look on her face, she just went kind of white. And she's like, I didn't say that. And she's like, how do you know that name? And I said, I heard someone say it in the room. She's like, that is the name of my dad's ex-girlfriend from way back.
Oh, my.
Who passed away in a car crash.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that freaked me right out. Other than that, though, I haven't had much more experiences in that house. We moved out probably after a year. So her dad still hears. I guess one night he woke up, he heard footsteps around the house.
Right.
So he actually grabbed a baseball bat, thinking someone was in the house, started walking around, looking around, nothing at all, no one around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's it so far for that.
Now, let me
Yeah.
I was just going to say, do you think it something about that? What do you think it is about that house? Do you have any theories, or has anybody said anything? Did something happen there, maybe in the distant past? Any thoughts?
Other than the girlfriend passing away, that's the only thing I can really think of. Like her dad's a pretty religious guy.
Mm-hmm.
He goes on about old spirits all the time. He says he sees a lot of. He feels like an old spirit. He sees them going around, seeing shadow figures and stuff. That's the only relation I can see to that.
Wow. Well, you know, you experience it, and it engenders, I think, an interest when you kind of see it with your own eyes. It's one thing to be interested theoretically, but when something happens to you, I think it brings it to a whole new level.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well,
and I got another story if I could do that.
Absolutely. Please do.
Okay. So, sleep paralysis is something that I deal with on a regular, like on and off, and I understand how it works. And like the one feeling I describe every time I go into sleep paralysis is when you go down a hill in a car and you get that gut feeling.
Yep.
It's sort of like that, but you're getting sucked into your body almost when you're about to sleep. So I've had it on and off, and I had a particular time this year, I got up out of bed, and I was in that state, and I broke out of it, went to step over the side of my bed, and I fell through the floor, and then woke up back in my body in sleep paralysis again.
Oh my gosh.
So during that stay, I kind of break out of it again. I go to get off the other side of the bed, right through the floor again. Almost like I just kind of vanished out of the floor into my bed.
Oh my.
So that freaked me out. And then had another occurrence. I actually woke up. I walked into the kitchen, and I had like a glare over my eyes, felt kind of foggy. Like, you know, when you wake up in the middle of the night and you're not really all there.
Sure.
It was kind of like that. And I walked around through the kitchen, or I came back, and something just didn't feel right. And when I looked in the bedroom, I saw myself laying there beside my girlfriend. As soon as that happened, snap out of it, I'm back laying in my body, like in sleep.
Those are always the freakiest, when you actually see yourself.
Yeah, it was unreal. That's the first time that ever happened to me. Yeah. Hopefully it can happen again, I guess.
Now, I want Dylan, thank you for listening. I know you're a newly minted Plus Club member. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I just started up on that.
And I hope that you will come back and tell us more paranormal stories if and when they happen to you.
Yep. Well, I got tons. Well, my family does. So
next up on the campfire, Julia from Connecticut. Now, we've talked about haunted houses before, but can you imagine living in a house growing up that may have been a portal to the supernatural? Well, Julia can, and she's going to tell us about it. Julia, I know you've been listening for about 6 months. Welcome, and tell us about this portal.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you for having me. Well, I grew up in a house in in Pennsylvania, and there was always activity going on for years and years. It was always really random activity. There was never anything that happened that made a lot of sense, you know, like someone's arguing, so the ghost is mad, so they slam doors or something. Nothing like that ever happened. We had, like I said, so much random activity. There'd be, I've seen full body apparitions of little boys. I've had dogs in my room growling, completely random. So one night, it kind of all escalated towards this. It got really active, really heavy with this.
Mm-hmm.
So one night I was sleeping, and I woke up, and I could see my feet, but I was completely paralyzed.
Oh, my.
And it looked like there was, like, a sheet in front of my eyes, so I could see my feet, but there was something like a mesh blocking it.
Oh, and I've heard that before from other people about this mesh. I have heard this before, but go ahead.
Yeah, it was so weird, and I didn't really like think of anything because it lasted for about 5 seconds, that happening, and then there was flashing. So it was as if you blink your eyes really quickly, right. I could see my feet, and then I could see myself standing up in my room, and it would go back and forth between this, the whole incident. So I got up, and I start walking towards my hallway. And again, like I said, this is going back and forth between me and seeing my feet and me walking towards my hallway. And I open my door, and there's two little girls sitting in our hallway, and all the wood floor is gone, and it's all cobblestone.
Uh-huh. Oh,
and they're sitting in front of a pentagram.
Wow.
And they're staring at me. There's two of them. They're probably about 10 and 12. The smaller one was horrified. She was staring at me. She looked so scared. The other one just looked really confused. So I just started walking past them, having no idea what the heck is going on at this point. And I looked down my hallway. We have a very open floor plan in that house, so you could see the living room and the kitchen at the same time. There's no separation. And my mom is standing behind our couch that we used to separate the living room and the kitchen.
Right.
And so I start walking towards her. And again, it looks like my house, but it's darker. We live in a city, so there's a lot of lights, but it was darker than usual.
Yeah.
So I'm walking towards her. Again, it's flashing back and forth between me being able to see my feet and me walking through my house. And I walk towards her, and she's just staring at her front door, which generally throughout the day we keep it open.
Right.
And so I walk over to her, and I stand next to her, and I turn to where she's looking, and our front door is open. And then it just slowly starts to close, and there's this big black shadow, darkest thing you could ever imagine. And it's so tall that it has to be bent over because it can't fit into the room.
Oh,
and it's slowly closing the door. And then just instinctually, I grabbed my mom's hand, and we both started screaming, "In the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to leave." And I just started screaming it. And it felt like at that point that I got sucked back into my body.
Huh.
And I just woke up. Like, that mesh over my eyes just disappeared, and I was just in my room, and I could move again. And then I like passed out. Basically, I don't remember going back to sleep. I just remember waking up the next morning. And I thought it was just a dream or like sleep paralysis at that point. And so I found my mom, and I told her about it. And her face went completely white. And she told me that she had seen the exact same figure in our house, looming over her bed.
Oh, my goodness.
As, 7 feet tall, bent over. She was horrified. She just put, the covers over her head, just prayed that it would go away.
Wow.
And so that happened. And then there was a little backstory that we found out years later because we moved out. There's an older neighbor that lives next door. And she told us that our house used to actually be a barn back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And the house that was next to us was actually the farmhouse for the barn, which made a lot of sense because my siblings lived there, and they had a lot of activity going on there too. And so we always thought it was a garage or something, but no, she's like, no, it's a barn. They used to be all cobblestone there. And I was like, you can still see on the streets, there's still cobblestone there.
Right.
So my assumption from all of this, I haven't done a lot of research, but just from what she's told me, that they might have opened something back then.
Right.
And I think I was seeing those kids that messed around with something that they shouldn't have messed around with. Because, like I said, there was so much random activity that didn't correlate with each other. So, I don't know.
Well, I got to tell you, that is frightening. So do you think that, does this given you, it sounds like it's given you a respect for this. In other words, you talked about people messing around with something they shouldn't mess around in. Do you think that there are dangers sometimes when people try to summon the supernatural?
Definitely. That house, there was a lot of, it was a very heavy house. There was a lot of evil in there. I don't think that what me and my mother saw was anything good. We all had very bad attitudes when we lived in that house, very negative all the time. As soon as we moved out, 100% stopped. We are all back to normal. So I think there's something incredibly wrong there.
Yeah. That's interesting. And that's frightening. This idea of seeing this mesh and over your bed. Frightening.
Yeah. It was like being in a fog. It was, I don't know if it was like astral projecting. Like, I was going back to when they did it because they saw me. Those two little girls saw me. You know, it wasn't like I was looking at them, like at a projected image.
Right.
They were looking at me. So I have no idea what happened, but.
Well, I'm glad you're out of there.
Yeah,
your mom's out of there. But I'm so glad that you found the campfire and decided to share your story. Thank you so much, Julia.
Thank you, Jim.
If you enjoy adult coloring books, check out the True Ghost Story adult coloring book inspired by Jim's Campfire podcast and books. Creepy Coloring Fun, created by illustrator Len Peralta. Find it at Amazon, or for the direct links, go to jimharoldbooks.com. Now, back to the show.
It is great to hear from our neighbors up north. Natalie is joining us tonight from Toronto, Canada. She's been listening for about 6 months, found us on iTunes, where many, many people find us. So thank you, iTunes, and thank you, Natalie. And she has a very touching story about her grandma. Natalie, welcome to the program, and tell us what happened.
So my grandma used to come down to visit from up north. She lived about 12, 13 hours away. And she came down like once a year for maybe at least 5 years or so. And when she used to come down, she got really, really close to my family dog. Mm-hmm. He would sit outside her room and wait for her to wake up, and she would spoil him and everything. And one day I was getting ready for school. I was in high school at the time. I think it was like the end of high school. And I was in the living room with my mom. And all of a sudden the dog started kind of jumping up and down by himself, almost in the middle of the living room, and rolled on his back and started playing like someone was rubbing his belly or something like that.
Right.
Which was really, really weird for him to be playing by himself. He was somewhat of an old dog. So we found it weird, and we just kind of let it be, but we both pointed it out to each other that he was kind of acting a bit strange. And that day I had went to school. I was in the middle of my last class, I believe, and my teacher had gotten a call saying to go down to the principal's office. So I did, and they said to my parents, "You'll be picking me up, that there is something going on," and I were to wait for them. And during then, my mom came and told me that my grandma had actually passed away, and they had gotten a call from my uncle who lived up north with her that she had passed away earlier that morning.
Oh my.
So as kind of sad of a story that is, we didn't really put the connections together until a little bit afterwards, but we realized the connection that she had with my dog, which was probably one of the strongest I've seen between pets and people. And we kind of figured that was something to do with her, maybe her passing and saying, "Oh, I'm okay," or maybe visiting him and letting him know, like, everything is going, like, it's okay. So it was kind of a really, really cool thing to see after the fact when we kind of put two and two together.
Well, maybe it was a way for her to communicate both with him and both of you as well, you know, because thinking that over time you would kind of see it for what it was, and what a neat story and a message that it is. And we've heard of these stories many times, and there's interesting research actually that Raymond Moody, who did the seminal work Life After Life, He okay. interviewed people who had near-death experiences, and they said that they were able to go great distances and visit people in their family, regardless of distance, clear across the country. So it kind of maps very well to with what you're saying, and it is a fascinating story.
Yeah, it was so neat to see, now that we can see what was going on with the dog as well. I think it was her way of showing to us, because he was playing right in the middle of the living room, so it was clear cut to us that he was doing something unusual. So it was really awesome to see.
What a great story. Natalie, thank you for joining us on the Campfire. We'd love to hear from our Canadian listeners. We want to hear from more of you, and please spread the word up there. We really appreciate it.
I will, for sure. Have a good night.
We have a new listener, another new listener. A lot of new listeners call into the Campfire. I'm not sure what that means. Either only our new listeners call in, or mainly our new listeners call in, or maybe we're just getting a ton of new listeners. Either way, that's great. And we're so happy that Danny from Toronto is joining us on the line. And she has a story about cats. I won't spoil it. I'll let her tell it to you. But Danny, welcome to the program. And tell us about the cats in your life.
Well, thank you, Jim. So the short summary of my story is that I sent Jim is that it seems that I may have some sort of cat guardian or something looking out for me, most notably in the shape of several different cats. And I myself have never owned a cat, but they seem to protect me wherever I go. So I'm actually from Virginia, and I'm only in Toronto to study for university. And back in Virginia, since I was little, many people would compare me to a cat. Now, I've never really had a huge thing for cats. I mean, I like them a lot, and I've actually always wanted a dog. But even so, many people compared me to a cat, and I never really understood why. Many people just said that I was quiet, observant, independent, and they just got this feeling of something cat-like coming from me, which I guess I never really understood as a kid. Anyways, fast forward to when I'm about 11, and I had just moved into this huge house, and I didn't really like the neighborhood. It was a little bit too big, too, I guess, fake for me. It was a country club.
Right.
And my family wasn't really well off, so I just felt out of place. And I was also the subject of really bad bullying from my peers here, and I didn't really feel safe. So my first summer in that house, I was outside just sitting and enjoying the warm air when I suddenly saw a cat. Now, my area is known to have lots of stray cats, so this wasn't abnormal. And I'm pretty sure most pet owners and animal lovers alike know this, but I started talking to a cat. And I'm pretty sure many people do this. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't anything much, just things like, what a nice day, or you're very fluffy. but soon after I started talking to it, it sort of just ran off, and I didn't think much of it until it came back with a dead bird, and it laid it at my feet. I actually didn't think it was disgusting or weird, since I heard that cats do that if they like you, but I was just amazed that this cat had liked me enough in the few minutes that I was talking to it to just plop a dead bird at my feet. And it ran off again, and that was the last I saw of it. So fast forward a few years later on, and I'm in yet another new house, this time a townhouse. And I was going through some rough times, and my family had just moved into this newly built place. And other houses around it were still being built, so it was nice, dark, and quiet at night, because it was practically a construction site. And I always love seeing the stars, so it was really nice. But one winter night, I'm walking home alone in the dark, and I'm pretty scared. I did theater back in high school, and rehearsals would often end late, so it was pretty kind of creepy, I guess. And suddenly this beautiful tabby cat comes out of the bushes, and after a few seconds of looking at me, it comes to join me as I walk home. Because on one side is this construction site, and on the other side is this sort of like dark forest. And I thought it was peculiar, but I liked it. And when I arrived at my place, I said goodbye to it, just normal little, oh, thanks. And when I walked up, I realized that it was waiting for me until I went inside, and then it started leaving. And that sort of started this chain of events. So, like I said, I did theater back in high school, so I'd have to walk home a lot, and alone, in the dark. And it was only when I felt scared that a cat joined me, and it was almost never the same cat. And it would just walk alongside me, sort of keep its distance like cats do, but it would always be nearby me. And there are a few cats that came back several times. For example, a beautiful black cat with a white spot on its head, or this really nice short-furred gray cat with really bright blue eyes. but they were almost always different. And the only time one ever got mad at me and picked at my jeans, not painfully, of course, was when I tried to take a picture of it to prove to my friends that I wasn't lying about these cats. And, of course, I never tried taking a picture again after that because it got really mad at me. But these cats would always escort me home and wait until I was safely inside before leaving, just like the first one. And there was one night in particular that I remember where I was feeling a lot more fearful than usual, to the point where I was actually shaking. And the first tabby cat came up to me, and suddenly we heard this rustling in the bushes because it was next to a forest. And the cat immediately leaped in front of me and started hissing. And when the rustling stopped, it came back to my side and stroked my leg with its head, sort of like it was saying, everything's okay now. So this was the first time that cat had actually touched me other than the time where I tried to take a picture. And it was a very loving stroke and something that as soon as it stroked my leg, I suddenly felt really warm inside and really like I was being protected. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciated it. And it was just like I was suddenly feeling so much better and a lot safer. So fast forward to a few weeks ago. I honestly thought that having cats protect me would stop when I moved to a city in a completely different country, and I actually didn't experience anything like this for a few years. But one night I decided that instead of going on the main roads, I would go on a more suburban route instead. It was a weekend night, and I knew there'd be a lot of drunk people out, and I kind of hate having to deal with them. So I was actually listening to Campfire. I had just gotten
Cool.
Yeah, and I was walking home, and some people might feel weird being in the dark alone and hearing ghost stories, but it actually made me feel pretty safe until I reached this particularly dark area of the suburban area where there was no light anywhere. And I suddenly felt like I was being followed and I started to walk faster. And it was at that moment when a cat joined me. And, you know, I've actually seen this cat several times before just roaming the area, and I just thought it was an outdoor cat, but this was the first time that this particular cat had approached me. And it sort of walked alongside me until I got to the main road, where I felt pretty safe again. And as soon as I started to turn the corner, it walked away and went back into the suburban area. And it didn't really look back at me as I said bye. And I got home safely that night and everything was fine. But of course, having just listened to Campfire, I was just like, I should tell this story. Because it was something that I've been telling many people for years now, and no one would ever really believe me.
Right.
And I just wanted to know if anyone else out there had any sort of animal guardian. And it was always strange to me because I've always heard of animals that protect others before, but it was always like the same pet, like the right. same dog. Yeah. So.
Well, the thing is I think one thing you'll find about the campfire, I hope you'll find about the campfire, is that we try to be accepting of people's stories. We don't, you know, laugh and point and go, ha, ha, ha. We try to say, hey, you know, strange things happen in this universe. We cannot account for all of them. That's why folks are welcome to share kind of unusual stories. And I think the cats have always been kind of a sign throughout history with this mystical kind of reputation. And maybe there's something to it. Now, a lot of times it can be sinister, but in this case, it sounds like it's a good thing. So I would love to hear if other people have similar stories, Danny. And I thank you so much for listening to the show and sharing yours with us tonight.
Yeah, no problem. I'm on the virtual campfire, actually. And I love the community there. I'll be excited to hear any stories.
Very good. And by the way, folks, if you're not on that, you really need to get on that. I think we're on our way to 7,000 members. It's absolutely free. It's on Facebook. It's called Jim Harold's Virtual Campfire. And to find it, all you have to do is go to Facebook and search for Jim Harold's Virtual Campfire. We do double check. You have to ask for permission to come into the group because we try to keep the spammers out the best we can. And I think we do a pretty good job of it. And everybody seems to be pretty supportive over there, and it's a great community. And Danny, thank you for being a part of it and giving me an opportunity to put in a little plug.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you so much.
If you love true ghost stories and tales of the strange, check out Jim's best-selling Campfire series of books. Each has 70 stories direct from the campfire. And hundreds of reviewers have given the series a 4.5-star average rating. Each of the 4 campfire books stand alone, so you can start at any point in the series. Best of all, you can get each on Kindle for less than the price of a fancy coffee, and the paperback version is available if you're old school. So, campfire fans, what are you waiting for? Get the books at Amazon or go to jimharoldbooks.com for the direct links. They make great gifts, too. Get your spooky on and read a campfire book today.
Orlando joins us from New York, New York. The city so nice, they named it twice. After what a city it is. Anyhow, Orlando has a story about when he was in college and some very, very strange happenings. Orlando, thank you for listening, and thank you for coming on the campfire. Please tell us what happened.
Hey, Jim. So, and back in 1991, I attended Norwich University, the Military College of Vermont. And when I got there, you know, us recruits, you know, underclassmen, freshman recruits, there were always ghost stories passed about.
Sure.
Most of the ghost stories had to involve the haunted library, Chaplain Hall. And it was said that it was so haunted that the head librarian, she saw something. And after that incident, she would never talk about it, but she wouldn't even venture off like the forum or the foyer in the front, off the main floor past sundown. So, you know, we hear the stories, but I really didn't pay too much attention to it or anything like that. So on this particular day, I had a project for English class to report on Carl Sandburg. Never even heard of Carl Sandburg before, but I'm searching all around, and the way they designed it, the Dewey Decimal System was all broken up between rooms, and I'm searching room to room trying to find his works. And I come across one room, and in there, I see upperclassmen, and me and the upperclassmen kind of had some tensions because just not too long prior, there was a party, and he invited like all the other black underclassmen, but he didn't invite me because I wasn't cool enough. So I kind of had a little bit of tension with him for that. There weren't too many black people in Vermont at that time, in that school at that time. So I'm like, So when I arrived in the room, it was the Russian room, and the way it was situated, it was a rectangular room, and there were rows of books that were on the far side of the wall that ran down the length of the wall. And I guess in between one or two of the rows, there were long tables. And so as soon as you come in, you can just walk straight down and just look down and look at the book rows and see, you know, the decimal system or the where the books are. So as soon as he sees me, he's at the long table and he's talking to a girl. And as soon as he sees me, he instantly kind of like puts on a little bit more bravado because he's talking to a girl and, you know, he wants to show off a little bit. And me, naturally, I want to kind of test him. So I'm like, if I can trick up his game or make him nervous, so be it. So I'm going to have a little fun with this. So I'm walking down the aisle pretending like I'm looking for my book. But really, I'm just kind of messing with him a little bit. And he's talking to the girl, and the girl has some conversation, and she's like, so do you really believe this place is haunted? And he flashes me a look for a hot second. And I look back at him like, well, what are you going to say? You going to play tough? And he turns back to her, and he dismissively waves his hands. He's like, man, I don't believe in none of that. So as soon as he says that, a book from behind the shelf, probably like not the second from the top shelf, from right behind him, flies off the bookshelf, lands spine down right beside him, open straight up, not a page flapped or anything like that. It was just like something just would fly, slammed it down, opened it up specifically right beside him. And everybody stops in the room. And I'm like, whoa. And it shocked everybody. But at first I tried to rationalize, like, wow, that must be the awesomest prank. Whoever's behind that book row to push that book out. And that's what I'm hoping. Anyway, the girl, she had her back facing towards me, so I couldn't really see her expression at the time. I'm facing towards him, because I'm walking towards him. So she hurries up and gathers up all her stuff at her desk, at the desk table, shoves it inside her book bag, and just walks out and walks towards my direction and past me, face flush. Now, there's another door at the other end of this rectangular room that she could have walked past.
Right.
But she didn't want to go that route because she didn't want to see what was behind the bookshelf, where the book came from. So he looks at me after she left, and I flash him another silent look like, yeah, that's what you get. Now it's my turn to kind of put on the bravado because that's exactly what he did get. So he packs up, and he's kind of jittery, puts his stuff in his bag, and he also gets up from the desk and walks past me.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't want to see what's behind that. So at this point, I have to satisfy my curiosity to see if anybody's behind there. So I continue, and I walk, and sure enough, I look down the aisle. There's nobody in the aisle. The book rows runs flush all the way down. And it was like the third story of this building anyway. So no one's going to go through any great lengths or Houdini.
Right.
There was no one there. And I was the only one in that room from the vantage point that could see everything. So with that, as soon as I said that, I'm like, thought a couple seconds, I'm like, and like that dude anyway. Pounded my chest twice, flashed the peace signs. I'm like, I'm out. And I left the restroom room. But the unfortunate thing is, after seeing something like that, when I did track down where Carl Sandburg's books works were, they were in the basement, in the stacks in the basement, and they didn't even turn the lights on in the basement.
Ooh.
It was all natural sunlight with red emergency lights on. So it's dark and red in there,
and I had
to go down there to find that book. And after a certain bit, I had to just say, well, if what I saw happened in a bright luncheon room, fully lit sunlight, you know what? It's going to get me anyway.
That's true. And you know, that's funny you mention that. I talked to Lloyd Auerbach, who is like a genius when it comes to the paranormal. And I think he knows about as much as anybody living about the subject. And he said that people think that spooky things happen in the dark. But in truth, research shows that paranormal things can happen just as likely in the broad daylight any time of day. So, we are conditioned to believe that because of movies. And it sounds like, you know, this kind of sets you on a lifetime of being interested in this stuff.
Well, I got to tell you one thing. I mean, much respect to everybody's point of view. I would probably be a hardcore atheist right now, but when you see something like that, and I can't rationalize it, I can't explain it. I mean, I know I didn't make that book come off that shelf. Everybody was surprised. When I see something like that, that opens the possibility that, you know, there's something else greater that's going on. I don't know what it is, but I couldn't see it, but it made its presence felt, and it sent in a response to something that happened in this plane of existence. So when I factored that in, you know what? I don't know what else is out there, but there's got to be something else.
I think so,
and
too.
I also did see, at a later point in my life, apparition, a full-body apparition in Central Park.
Oh, my.
Yep. To have time, I can tell you that one, too.
Go ahead and tell us what happened.
I had bumped into a coworker that I hadn't seen in a long time, and we had set up a date to go eat at a restaurant, Jekyll and Hyde, that was in Midtown. And we're like, okay, next Friday. And we met up that next Friday. And well, let's just say that we're going, after dinner, we're just going to go to Central Park, someplace nice and secluded, so to speak, and just chill out and talk. So So we decided to go down to the entrance that was closest to us, which it was the southeast section of the park. And we go there, and there's a pond there. And I believe that's Duck Pond, that's located right there. And there was a walkway that ran alongside the western side of Duck Pond. And to one side of this walkway was a slope incline that ran up to the main road thoroughfare that runs all over Central Park. And then to the other side of the walkway we were on, it just sloped down into Duck Pond. And the pathway itself went down, down an incline towards where you really got next to the pond. And then it went, sunk down for a little bit, and then it rose back up. So there was a slight hill even on the walkway we were on.
Right.
And we're there for a little bit, and it started raining. I mean, really bad. It was drizzling at first, so I fortunately bought an umbrella, a nice heavy-duty umbrella. And it was raining pretty, it was raining off and on at first, but we were under, we sat down on benches and we're under some trees. So we weren't that bad. We were just stuck it out. But then it got really heavy, really heavy. And it was like even bizarre how hard this rain came through. And it came through so hard that although the tree lines kind of protected us, even with the umbrella that we were dry, the walkway became flooded. There was water that was running down the from the slope, running down the hill onto the walkway. And then there was water from the top of the walkway itself that was just running down and causing like little rivets and channels all over the place and washing like mud and rock there. So we decided to walk up a little bit to higher ground. And as we're there, we're stopping and we're up under the tree and we're kind of waiting for it to die down a little bit before we leave. And she's looking behind me. We're facing each other underneath the umbrella. And she's looking behind me. She's like, "Where did he come from?" And I turn around like, "Who is she talking about?" And I turn around and there's this guy that I can only describe as he was probably maybe 30 to 40 yards away from us. And I swear it looked from the back, and he was walking away from us. It looked from the back that he was wearing some old timey suit with a hat. It just looked out of place. No one would be dressing like that, like now. And he's walking, and it doesn't even look like he's getting wet. He should be splashing because he's right now, he would be like in the low part of the pathway, which was totally flooded out by now. He's not even getting wet. He's not causing any splashes. And he's just walking away from us. And I'm baffled. I'm like, how did he even get there? So then I turn around back to her. I'm like, where did he come from? And then she looks at me for a quick second and we both exchange. And then she looks back up and I saw her jaw drop. She's like, "He's gone." And I turned back around and he was gone. And it only was like a matter of a split second between, you know, when I turned around and looked at her, we made eye contact and she saw that he was gone. And there's no way that anybody disappears like that just instantly. And the fact that, you know, he wasn't getting wet. And there was nowhere that he could have came from without us seeing or hearing from him. He would have splashed in puddles or anything. There was nothing. So that kind of freaked us out. But then after that point, I looked at her like, well, if he wanted to really scare us, he would have been scared us anyway. So, you know what, let's just wait till the rain to die down. And we did. And we left. And, you know, we didn't really talk about it much until after we got back home, and then we texted, or not text back then, but then we, I don't know what we did back then, but probably emailed each other back then. You know, that was a ghost. Yeah, that was a ghost. Like, yeah.
So
and there you go.
And so there you have it. A couple of really strong experiences with the supernatural. Well, Orlando, thank you so much. I appreciate you for listening to the programs and for sharing your stories, because these things do happen. And thank you again for being a part of the campfire tonight. Well, I hope that you enjoyed this edition of the campfire as much as I did. Also, make sure that you check out our friends over at ring.com/campfire for $50 off the Ring of Security kit. Again, is there really a more important purchase than you can make? I love mine. I think you'll love yours as well. We thank you so much for tuning in. Please tell your friends about the show. Hey, I've got an idea. You have a friend who loves the paranormal. Take their phone with their permission and show them, literally show them, hey, these are the shows you can access. They are free. Here's how you can do it. Now, doesn't matter if they're iPhone or Android. We've got all the bases covered these days. On the iPhone side, of course, you've got the podcast app. And if you're on the computer and you want to stay in the Apple ecosystem, you can use iTunes. But then there's so many more options today. And we love Apple and we love everything they've done for podcasting. But some people don't have Apple products. Maybe they have an Android. Now, the world is your oyster. We are on Spotify. We are on iHeartRadio. We are on Stitcher. We're on all the podcast apps. We're on, for example, Pocket Casts and all the different apps you can download for podcasts. We're on TuneIn Radio. My goodness, you can listen on your Roku, or you can listen via your Amazon Echo. There's no end to the ways that you can listen. So please show a friend today. Show them about the campfire. We would appreciate it. We thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next time. And until then, as always, stay spooky. Thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Jim Harold's Campfire. Tune in again next time for more stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things.